Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Kevin Moss. I'm an account manager here at Canada Life, and I'm joined today by my colleague Kim Jarvis, one of our technical managers and member of our award-winning ICANN technical team for this morning's webinar. Before we get started, just a few quick housekeeping items to cover off. For those listening live this morning, CPD certificates will be emailed across your registered email address within the next 48 hours. Unfortunately, CPD is not available to those listening to this recording or via our podcast service. Talking of recordings, today's webinar should be uploaded to our archive section of our website within 48 hours. Please do raise any questions you may have as we go using our chat box facility on screen, and we will try to answer as many of these as possible at the end of the webinar if we have time. Copies of the slides, plus any relevant handouts and sales aids, can be downloaded from our control panel on your screen. So, without further ado, I'll now hand you over to Kim, who will talk to you through the agenda for today's webinar. Kim.
Thanks, Kevin. Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining me this morning. Right, today's webinar, I'm going to be talking about the taxation of trusts. I'm going to look at the three different types of trust: interest in possession, bare, discretionary. And then I'm going to look at the three different types of taxation: income tax, capital gains tax, and inheritance tax. Okay, so let's first of all look at an interest in possession trust. Excuse me. So an interest in possession trust, that's where the trustees must pass all of the trust income to the beneficiary, a life tenant. Okay, the trustees are responsible for paying any income tax and any income that they receive into that trust. If the income is dividend income, it's at 7.5%. Other income is 20%. What they can do is, because, like I said, it's the beneficiary that receives that income, they, when it gets given to the beneficiaries can actually reclaim the tax that's deducted that the trustees have paid. Okay, so a better way of doing that is for the trustees can actually mandate the income to a beneficiary. And what that means is it doesn't actually go into the trust, it bypasses the trust, it gets passed directly to the beneficiaries. So it's actually taxed at the beneficiary's marginal rate of tax. And that means they're entitled to the dividend allowance. Because you've got to remember that if the trustees are actually responsible for paying that tax and they pay it, then they're not entitled to the dividend allowance. And then they actually have to register the trust under the Trust Register Service. So in a way, it's probably better if you're dealing with an interest in possession trust to actually mandate the income out to that beneficiary. So then you can take away some of the administration from the trust. So that's the interest in possession trust. If you look at a bare trust, now with a bare trust, you actually look through that trust. Okay, and it's actually taxed at the beneficiary's marginal rate of tax. Now, because you look through that trust, they are entitled to the dividend allowance, and that's currently 2,000. But things that you've got to look out for is you've got to look out for the parental settlement rules. Now, the parental settlement rules apply where a parent has actually taken out a bare trust for a minor unmarried child. Now, what the legislation says is then if the beneficiary is your child, they're unmarried, it's actually taxed as the parent's income, as your income. Okay, so anything over £100 is actually taxed at the parent's income. Anything less than that, it would actually be taxed at the beneficiary's rate. The other thing that you've got to look out for is you've got to look out for settlor interested trusts. Now, a settlor interested trust is one where the settlor is a beneficiary, or the settlor's spouse or registered civil partner can be a beneficiary. Okay, so if you've got a trust where either of those people can be beneficiaries, then the income tax is on the settlor. Now, if you look at the screen, I've said that it doesn't include widow, widower, or a surviving civil partner. So what we always say is if you've got a client that wants the spouse to be a beneficiary, we would always suggest that once the settlor has died, then they can be added as a beneficiary because then it wouldn't be a settlor interested trust. Okay, So that is the interest in possession and the bearer trust. Now, the one that you've got to be most familiar with is the discretionary trusts. So if you just look at the income tax for the discretionary trusts. So trustees, they receive income into that trust. They are taxed. Now, the first 100,000, that's the standard trust rate band. So the first 100,000, you're taxed on dividend income at 7.5%. Other income, like rental income, bank interest, would be 20%. Anything over the 1,000, again, for dividend, it's 38.1%. For other income, it's the 45%. So that's what it's taxed in the actual trust. Now, you've got a beneficiary. The trustees want to give some money to that beneficiary. Now, irrespective of how it was taxed in the trust, when it comes out to the beneficiary, it's taxed as, it's treated as trust income, and trust income is always taxed at 45%. So when it comes out to that beneficiary, it will come out with a tax credit for 45%. Okay. Now, if we just look at a few examples of that. So I'm going to assume that the standard trust weight band has all been absorbed elsewhere. So you've got a discretionary trust. Those trustees receive gross interest from a bank of £100. The trustees will pay £45 off tax to HMRC. That leaves them with a net income of £55. Now, if they get dividends, remember dividends are taxed at 38.1%. So similarly, they'll receive £100 of dividends. They'll pay HMRC £38.10, leaving £61.90 net income. Okay, so that's straightforward. That's how it's taxed in the trust. But what about if they want to distribute that? Okay, so distributing interest. Again, remember the tax that was suffered in the trust was £45. So they have got £55 of an amount that they can distribute. It comes out to that beneficiary with a tax credit of £45. So if you're a non-taxpayer, you can reclaim that. You'll reclaim the £45. Similarly, basic, higher rate, additional. They can reclaim, well, the basic and the higher can reclaim, additional has just got no further tax to pay. And the way that they reclaim that is on their self-assessment form. So the net effect to the beneficiary is, if you're a non-taxpayer, they've received net dividend, or sorry, net interest of £100, basic rate 80, higher 60, additional 55. So effectively, they're being taxed at their marginal rate. But remember, when it's distributed from that discretionary trust, it's treated as trust income. So they can't benefit from the starting rate band or the personal savings rate band because it's treated as trust income. So that's the interest. So if you look at the dividends, and this is where it gets a little bit more interesting, a little bit more complicated. So remember I said that dividends is taxed at 38.1%, okay? And that is what the trustees have had to pay to HMRC. Now they want to distribute that to a beneficiary now, but again, remember beneficiaries receive it as trust income and they receive it with a tax credit of 45%. So effectively, the trust needs to distribute to the beneficiary £55, but they haven't paid enough tax to do that. So what they have to do is they have to account for an additional tax on that distribution to the beneficiary of 6.90. Okay, and that's what's true. You've probably heard the term tax pool. That's what it's meant by a tax pool. So really, what the trustees need to do is to ensure in this tax pool that they have paid enough tax to match the trust tax that's paid during the life of that trust. So again, if we just look at another example. So like I said, non taxpayer. So if we just deal with the non taxpayer, the trust dividends £100. The tax suffered by the trustees is 38.10. Okay, but they need to distribute £55 to that beneficiary, and that non rate taxpayer will be wanting to reclaim that £45 because he doesn't pay any tax, but he won't be able to reclaim that if the trust hasn't paid the additional £6.90. And again, as it's trust income, you cannot get an allowance for the dividend allowance of 2000 because it's coming out of the trust as trust income. Okay. Right, so just to sort of take it one step forward, I just wanted to go through a little bit of a case study because this is a question that we get asked quite a lot when you're dealing with dividend incomes and discretionary trusts. So Joan sets up a discretionary trust. Eric's one of the beneficiaries. He's earning 20,000 pension income, so he's a basic rate taxpayer at the moment. The trustees receive 10,000 dividend income, and they want to pass that on to Eric. So this is the only income that the trust receives. So how much tax does that trust actually pay? Right, so remember, discretionary trust, the first 100,000 is taxed for dividends at 7.5%. The remainder 9,000 then is taxed at 38.1%. So you're looking at net dividends of 6,496, okay? So they've actually paid, currently the trust has paid 3,504 in tax. They then want to distribute that to Eric. Now remember, when they distribute it to Eric, they distribute it as trust income, and that has to come out with a tax credit of 45%. So effectively, they need to distribute to Eric £5,500. They need to have paid tax on that of £4,500. So the additional tax that they need to put into that tax pool is £996. Okay, so and if they don't pay that, then Eric won't be able to reclaim the whole 45% in his self-assessment form. Then we've got to look at Eric receives it. So Eric is receiving 10,000 of trust income. If you add that 10,000 to his 20,000 pension income he was getting, he still stays a basic rate taxpayer. So he's looking at 20% on that 10,000. So he actually should be paying tax at 2,000. But the tax on the trust fund was 4,500. So what he can do is he can reclaim 2,500, but only, like I said, if the trust has actually paid the additional tax of £996. And remember, I know I keep banging on about this, but remember, it comes out as trust income, so it cannot be treated as dividend income in Eric's hands. And again, that's a question we get asked all the time. Surely they can use their dividend allowance. They can't because it's not classed as dividend income. And then the final thing I just want to look at on income tax is when it comes out of the trust fund, is it capital or is it income? So sometimes you think it could be capital, but it could be taxed as income just on the basis that it's coming out of the trust fund. So the Brodie Will Trust, it was 1933. And effectively what that case said was that you had a life tenant where the fixed income wasn't enough for them to live on. So the trustees decided to actually supplement that with capital from the trust. Now they actually lost that. And up until 1987, when the Stevenson case came around, the revenue were very clear on, if you're getting regular payments, we're going to tax it as income. But thankfully, what the Stevenson did, they successfully sort of overturned that slightly. And now HMR's view is, well, provided that there's a power in the trust deed to actually advance capital or to appoint capital to a beneficiary, then you can do that without it being treated as income. So generally what they're saying is, okay, if you've got the right to advance capital and you're not doing it on a regular basis or it's not augmenting income, then you can treat it as capital. We won't be treating it as income for you. But again, you've got to be very careful. Yes, you might think it's capital, but it may actually be taxed as income. So the next one I want to look at is income when you're dealing with a bond, an investment bond wrapper. Okay, so chargeable events, you all know, assessed against income tax. So we have a policy gain, again, with a discretionary trust. It's always taxed on the settlor if they're alive in the tax year and they're UK resident. If they've died in the previous tax year or they're not UK resident, then they're looking at the trustees. Similarly, if the trustees are not UK resident, they'll look at the beneficiaries. If none of the beneficiaries are UK resident, then there's no one to actually assess for income tax on it. Now, one of the good things with an investment bond that you can't do with the collective is that you do have the ability to actually change who the tax point is on when you're dealing with trusts. So you are, like I said, you all know, for if you're dealing with dividend income or rental income, bank interest, and you've got a discretionary trust, then it's always on the trust. But with an investment bond, when you're dealing with policy gains, again, you've got different chargeable people that you could put that tax point on. So this scenario, you've got the settlers 40%, the trust would pay 45%, you've got a beneficiary that's 20%. Now, provided you've got lives assured still alive when the settlor dies, the trustees can then control who to actually put that tax point on. So in this situation, you've got, well, leave it as it is, you could do that. If you've got a settlor that's 20% when they've died, they might want to surrender it, because again, if you surrender it in the same tax year that the settlor has died, it's still on that settlor, okay? So the settlor might have died in May 2017. The trustees have got up to the 5th of April 2018 to actually think about what they want to do. And if they surrendered it before the 5th of April 2018, the tax point would be on the settlor. But if the settlor has died in the previous tax year, then that's when the tax point is on the trustees. And again, they might want to, if you're dealing with a beneficiary that's 45%, they might just want to surrender it themselves and pay it to the beneficiary. But again, if they do that, then they'd be looking at, they're liable to the tax. They would have to register the trust under the Trust Registry Service. But if you're dealing with a beneficiary who's 20%, they might want to assign it to that beneficiary. Or if you've got a minor beneficiary, they could still appoint it into a bare trust for them, surrender it, the tax point would be on the beneficiary. So you can see with investment bonds, there's more opportunity to actually move where the taxable point can be, unlike with, if you're dealing with, like I said, collectives. Right, so we're going on to capital gains tax. So bare trusts, like the income tax, you look through the trust, it's assessed on the beneficiary. And again, because you're assessing it on the beneficiary at their marginal rate of tax, you've got the annual exemption of 11,700, and then they're taxed at either 10%, 20%. But remember, we now have this 8% surcharge if the trust assets actually include residential property. All other trusts, the trustees are assessed. With interest in possession and discretionary trusts, the annual exemption is £5,850. It's always half what the individual annual exemption is. But what they've said is that if a settlor has more than one trust, then that's divided even more, but it's only divided up to a maximum of five. So I could have 10 trusts, and the minimum annual exemption on each one of those trusts for capital gains tax would be 1,170. And then the CGT rate for interest in possession and discretionary trusts are 20%. But again, you've got that 8% surcharge if it's got residential property. So just a little bit of a summary. So if you're dealing with collectives, again, bare trusts, it's assessed on the beneficiary, but you've got to remember the parental settlement rules and the settlor interested. Capital gains tax, assessed on the beneficiaries, so same, exactly the same. Interest in possession, assessed on the trustees, and then it's distributed to the life tenant. But again, remember I said that they could actually mandate it to the beneficiaries and actually bypass the trust having to pay the tax on that. Capital gains tax, 20%. The discretionary, you've got any income in excess of the standard rate. Again, you've got 45% for other income, rental, savings. The dividends, 83.1%. But again, remember when you distribute it to a beneficiary, it always comes out with a 45% tax credit. And then if you look at life policies and trust, similarly, bare trust assessed on the beneficiary, but remember the parental settlement rules because they still apply even if you've got an investment bond wrapper in there. Interest in possession trust, discretionary trusts, assessed on the settlor, provided they're alive and in the same tax year. Right, so now I just want to go on. So we've done income tax, we've done capital gains tax. So now I just want to go on and do the inheritance tax. So inheritance tax, bare trust. Now everyone knows a bare trust is a potentially exempt transfer. And what a potentially exempt transfer means is if provided you survive 7 years, that potential to be exempt has been realised, it becomes totally exempt. Because it's a potentially exempt transfer, there's no entrance charge when you actually set up this bare trust. And if you've survived the 7 years and you actually realise the exemption, then there's no IHT on death as well. But if you do die within 7 years of actually gifting into a bare trust, then the potential for the exemption hasn't been realised. And what you effectively have to do is it becomes chargeable. It's brought back into your estate to calculate any IHT that will be liable. It sits on the bottom and then the estate sits on top. Okay. The other thing you've got to consider with a bare trust is because a bare trust, the beneficiary is beneficially entitled to that. It's really their assets. All the trustee is doing is it's just holding it until that beneficiary can look after the money himself. So if he does die, then that is one of his assets. So that's included in his estate for IHT purposes. It'll also be included if they get divorced, bankrupt as well. Discretionary trusts or interest in possession trusts now. Now, with a discretionary trust, it's neither exempt or potentially exempt. It's a chargeable lifetime transfer. And what happens is you've got a 7-year rolling period for chargeable lifetime transfers, and you've got a limit of 325. Now, again, a question we get asked is that, I have a client where a spouse has previously died and they've transferred their standard nil rate band. So presumably I can gift 650 during my lifetime. And the answer to that is no. During lifetime, you've only got one standard nil rate band of 325. The transferable nil rate bands are only that they only apply on death. So once your client over a 7-year rolling period has put in more to discretionary trusts of 325, then anything above that, you're looking at an IHT bill of 20%. Okay. Now, if the settler dies within 7 years, then again, it fails. It's brought back into the estate to calculate any IHT payable. Now, if it's above the available nil rate bands that he's got, you actually pay IHT at 40%, but you will get a tax credit for the 20% that you paid during lifetime. So that's when the it's gone into the trust. So with a discretionary trust for IHT purposes, you have to also look at 10 yearly charges and exit charges. So when a trust has gone 10 years, the trustees need to determine whether there's a periodic charge, but they've also got to consider whether they need to report that as well. So even though you may not have to pay a periodic charge, if at the 10-year point, the value of your trust fund is over 260,000, then you still need to report it. And you do have to do that within 6 months of the 10-year anniversary. Now, the other thing is, if a periodic charge is due, then that periodic charge falls on the trustees, irrespective of what wrapper they hold underneath that. So just because they hold an investment bond underneath that, it's the periodic charge is still the liability of the trustees. So at that point, they would need to register it under the trust register service. So the next couple of slides I'm going to go through, I'm just going to have a look at various types of discretionary trusts and sort of how you would calculate the periodic and exit charges. So the first one I'm going to look at is the discretionary gift trust. Right, so discretionary gift trust, in May 2006, they put in 206,000 into this discretionary gift trust. Now, the chargeable lifetime transfer is 200,000 because I've said that he can use his previous and his annual 3,000 exemption. They've made no other chargeable transfers in the previous 7 years, and the IHT nil rate band was 285,000. So they didn't have to report it because it wasn't over 80% of the nil rate band. Provided he survived 7 years, it falls out. So in May 2013, that's out of his estate for IHT purposes. Okay, so we're now going to take it forward to May 2016 and just have a look at the periodic charges. Now, the thing you've got to think about is there was no entrance charge paid. So in the first 10 years, there will be no exit charges. So we just look, so at the periodic charge, what you've got to look at is you look at the value of the trust fund, but you've also got to think about what distributions were made to beneficiaries in the last 10 years, because you've also got to add them in again. Then if that is greater than the available nil rate band, a periodic charge will apply. Now, the thing with the available nil rate band is, now, again, it's not necessarily 325,000 currently that each trust would get, because you've got to consider what other chargeable transfers that settler made in the previous 7 years before that trust was set up. Okay, so if a periodic charge does apply, then there will be exit charges for the next 10 years. Okay, so we're just going to look at a few diagrams just to finish with, just to sort of try and get you to understand sort of various orders of giftings and how you would actually calculate the periodic charge. So look at the discretionary gift trust to start with. You can see the value of the trust fund here. So just before year 10, year 9, I've decided, or the trustees have decided, to actually distribute it all to the beneficiaries. There was no tax payable at the outset, so there would be no exit charge on distribution. Quite straightforward. Similarly, with this one, now you can see that the value of the trust fund was actually above the nil rate band in years 7 and 8. and then they distributed it to the beneficiaries. But you always just look at whether there was tax paid at the inception, at entry, or the 10 years, okay? You don't have to worry about the value of the trust fund during that 10-year period. So again, there was no tax to pay at outset. There's no exit to pay on the distribution. If you take it one step forward, so again, we want to make distribution to the beneficiaries in year 16, say. Now, what we're looking at is, because we're looking at the last periodic charge here, we don't have to go back to the beginning. So we need to see whether a periodic charge was paid on the previous 10 years. And in this situation, there's no periodic charge, so there's no exit charge. But one thing you've got to think about is, yes, there's no periodic charge to pay, but at the 10-year point, if that trust fund value was more than 260,000, which it currently is at the moment, 80% of the current nil rate band, then you may still have to report it. And again, similarly, you may have to report on an exit. Now, we'll look at one where the 10-year point, so the trust fund is over the nil rate band. There will be a 6% charge to pay, because that's the rate that you pay the periodic charge at. It's 30% of the lifetime rate, which is 20%, which is where you get the 6% from. So there was a periodic charge to pay. So when you distribute, there will be an exit charge to pay. And it is as straightforward as that. You just need to keep looking at, did I pay tax at either entrance or the 10-year point when you're looking at distributing to beneficiaries? So if you just say, so in that one, there was an exit charge to pay. So if you just have a look at how you would actually calculate that exit charge. So 10-year point, I've said it was worth 400,000, nil rate band 325, and that's its available nil rate band. Didn't make any other previous chargeable lifetime transfers in 7 years. So you're looking at the trustees would have to pay 4,500 as a periodic charge. 2 years later, it's worth 500,000 and the trustees have decided they're going to wind the trust up, pay it all out to the beneficiaries, okay? Because there was a periodic charge paid, there will be an exit charge to pay. And what you've got to do is you've got to work out the effective rate that was paid at the 10-year point. So effectively, you're looking at what tax was paid at the 10-year point over what the value was at that 10-year point. And that's how you get the effective rate. You then multiply that by the distribution, and then you multiply it by how much longer was it held in that trust fund. So it's worked out on quarters. That's where you get the 40 from. 40 is over a quarter a year for 10 years. And I've said in my example that it was paid out 2 years later, so that's 8 quarters. So effectively, you're looking at how much extra tax is needed to be paid by the trustees because they've distributed it to this beneficiary. So in this example, they'd have an extra 1,125 to pay on the exit when they wind up the trust and pay it out to the beneficiaries. Excuse me. But remember, 325 might be reduced if your client has made other lifetime gifting in the previous 7 years from when that trust was set up. It's not from when the 10th anniversary, it's from when the trust was actually set up. So we just look at gift and loan now. So gift and loan, normally set up with a £10. Normally that gift is exempt under the annual exemption, £3,000, okay? And then you loan a sum of money, that's not a chargeable transfer. But you still have the potential for periodic and exit charges there. But remember, there's no exit charges on the loan repayments that are made because the loan is actually carved out absolutely for the settlor. So that's not seen as a distribution from the trust. The periodic charges at the 10-year point, that's based on the full value of the bond less the outstanding loan. Okay. So if you just look at a few examples of this, so you've got the net nil rate band, you've got the net value of the trust fund. This is to do with the, I want to try and get around the order of gifting, okay? And you've got to keep considering what other transfers were made in the previous 7 years before your client actually took out this gift and loan trust. So if we say, for example, they took out discretionary gift trust a week before the loan trust for 150,000. So what that effectively does is that reduces the available nil rate band on this loan trust. So it reduces it by 150,000. So that effectively means that you've now got a loan trust that is actually paying a periodic charge. And that's only because of the order that your client has actually undertaken his estate planning. Now, if there's a periodic charge, there will be an exit if you make any distributions to the beneficiaries. So what you need to think about is the order in which you take out your gift and loans and your discretionary gift trust. Now, if the loan had been taken out before the gift trust, there's no transfer of value there because it's a loan. And like I said, the £10 gift is normally covered by the annual exemption. So you would actually be able to have the full nil rate band. Or you maybe take out two loan trusts. So if you do have a client that has actually made a charge of a lifetime transfer before he's actually come and spoken to you, but he now wants to do a loan trust, maybe take out two loan trusts, and effectively you're reducing the value of the trust fund, and you can actually then try and save having to pay a periodic charge on it. And again, if you've got no periodic charges, you've got no exit charges. Discounted gift trust is the next one. So with the discounted gift trust, you've got the chargeable transfer is the discounted gift. It's not the amount that you've invested into the policy. There's no exit charges on the payments to the settlor because they're absolutely carved out for him. But you still have the potential for periodic charges. Now, the periodic charge is based on the full value of the bond less the value of the settlor's entitlement. And if we just, again, I'll explain that just by diagram. So you've got nil rate band, the value of the trust fund. So you've got the potential to put in more to a discounted gift trust. So in this situation, if you were dealing with a discretionary gift trust with this amount of money in it and you distribute it to the beneficiaries, there would be an exit charge to there because you would have paid a periodic charge. But with a discounted gift trust, you revalue the settlor's entitlement at the 10-year point. That means that there's no periodic charge, and then there'd be no exit charge on the distribution. Now, the revaluing of the discount, a provider should be able to help you with this, but what HMRC say is you don't have to fully underwrite them again. Effectively, what you do is you use all the same underwriting that was carried out when the policy was taken out, and then you just add on 10 years. So when it was taken out, the client was 60 and they were not medically rated. 10 years on, they'll be 70. But if they were medically rated, say by 5 years, then you'd have to treat them at 75. But again, you've always got to remember about the reporting limit. So even though there's not a periodic charge to pay under any discretionary trust, you've always got to remember if it's 80% above the nil rate band, you have to report it to HMRC. Now, that's when the settlor is alive at the periodic charge. What if the settlor has died, say, in year 9? if the settlers died in year nine, then when you come up to year 10, there's nothing to revalue. So effectively, year 10, the value of the trust fund is that whole value. So there would be a periodic charge to pay there. So maybe the trustees should be thinking about, well, don't want to pay the periodic charge, maybe surrender it before year 10, because if they'd surrendered it in year 9, when it was taken out, there was no entrance charge, so there'd be no exit charge. But if they hadn't surrendered it and they paid that 6% periodic charge, then there's exit charges on any distributions in the next 10 years. Then the final one I want to look at is the flexible reversionary trust. Okay, so a flexible reversionary trust, it's a bit like the discounted gift trust. The settlor has got the right to take withdrawals only when they're needed, so there's no discount there, okay? But you do have the potential, as it's a discretionary trust, for periodic exit charges. So if we look at an example, so maturities to settlers, they are not exits from a flexible reversionary trust. And like I said, they work the same way as a discounted gift trust. Because they're absolutely carved out for the settlor, then they're not seen as distributions. But a distribution to a beneficiary is. Again, in this situation, there's no tax to pay at outset, so there's no tax to pay on the distribution to the beneficiaries. In this situation, the trustees have made a couple of distributions to beneficiaries, and then there's been a maturity to the settlor. There's no tax to pay at the outset. So on the distributions, there's no exit charges to the beneficiaries in the first 10 years. But then we look at the periodic charge, we look at the 10-year point. Now on that 10-year point, remember I said it's distributions in the last 10 years to beneficiaries. So those two distributions that were made to a beneficiary have to be added to the trust fund. And effectively, that would mean that a periodic charge was paid there. So even though the value of the trust fund is under the nil rate band, there is the potential there that you could still have a periodic charge to pay because you've got to include any previous distributions to the beneficiaries. And then there'd be exit charges on any other distributions to beneficiaries in the next 10 years. So that's just like a broad overview of the income tax, capital gains and inheritance tax. So really, just to recap, you've got to establish what type of trust you're dealing with, because as you've just seen, depending what trust you're dealing with, depends what tax rate that you have to pay. You've also got to look at what trust assets are in there, collective, bonds, others, because again, they pay different rates of tax on it. Then you've got to consider who's liable. You've got to remember that if the trustees are liable, they now have to register under the trust register system. Does it need registered? They might want to think about investment bonds. So that's just, like I said, just a little bit of a recap. I'm going to hand you back to Kevin now, and he's just going to go through just some of the trusts that we offer. Kevin.
Thanks for that, Kim. There's a lot of great information there that I hope everyone found really useful. Not surprising, though, we've had quite a few questions come in via our chat box, and perhaps we can just box off a couple of three of those now?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay. Under a discretionary trust, if there is an entry charge, how is the exit charge calculated in the first 10 years?
Ah, okay. Yeah, no, that's quite a good question, because that's true, actually, because you pay 20% when on an entrance charge, but if you're dealing with an exit charge in the first 10 years, you don't base it on the 20% tax that you've paid. You've got to do a hypothetical tax calculation, and effectively you've got to use 6%, just like when I did the example for the periodic charge. So yeah, you're looking at whatever the excess is above the nil rate band, you multiply that by 6%, and then you do the same calculation that I did in my slides.
Fantastic. Okay. In a joint settlement with an investment bond where one settlor died in a previous tax year, how is chargeable gain assessed?
Okay, so you've got joint settlors, each one has got their own settlement. So if you've got one settlor has died in a previous tax year, you'll be looking at 50% at the trustee rate on that one that's died, and then 50% on the settlor that's still alive.
Okay. Up for one more?
Yeah, okay, if we've got time. Yeah.
If a bond is in a DGT, discount and gift trust, can assignments be made to beneficiaries and any tax liabilities shifted if the settlor is still alive?
Right, well, I'm going to have to just answer for our DGT. The answer to that is no, because under our DGT, while the settlor is alive, because the trustees have got their absolute life, well, they need to be able to have enough money to provide that income stream to the settlor, we don't allow assignments. And if I was a trustee, I wouldn't be wanting to do that, because then I would be liable if the trust fund runs out of money and I can't pay the settlor his income.
Thanks, Kim. I think we have to leave you there, though we've had quite a few more. We're starting to run out of time. Before we go, I think it's worth recapping the trust solutions that are available to your clients via Canada Life. As you can see, we offer a number of standalone trusts, including gift trusts and gift and own, all of which can be used in conjunction with their UK and international investment bonds. In addition to the standalone trusts, we also offer a range of specialist packaged trust solutions, including the ever popular wealth preservation accounts, the controlled access account, and our UK and international discounted gift trust options. Support for advisors? Well, support-wise, we offer a wide range of support materials to help you write Business with Canada Life, including newsletters, brochures, and webinars such as this one. In addition, Canada Life are one of the few providers still offering dedicated office and field-based account managers who can help you with any aspects of writing Business with Canada Life. And don't forget our award-winning ICAN technical team, which is staffed by experts across all business lines and available to you both via telephone and email. As many of you will be aware, voting for the Financial Advisor Service Awards 2018 has now opened. If you have appreciated the help and support you've received from us over the last year, we'd really value your support by asking you to vote for us. The voting link can be seen on screen. Before we finish up, just a reminder, CPD certificates will be emailed across within 48 hours. A recording of the webinar also should be available online within 48 hours. Handouts can be downloaded from our control box on your screen. There'll be a short survey for you to complete as you exit this webinar, so we thank you for your feedback. We'll be switching off our audio now, but the chat box facility will remain open for the next few minutes for any further questions you may wish to raise. Thank you again for your time this morning. We hope you will join us again. Goodbye.